Today is August 4th, 1970. My name is Leonard Anderson, and this is an oral interview project for the Mill Valley Library. The person being interviewed today is Miss Rita Abrams, who has recently recorded a song by the appropriate name of Mill Valley. It is taken off on the charts, as they say, in the disc jockey business, and it is a national hit. And now we will hear from Rita Abrams. Rita, I want you to give me a little bit of information about yourself, about your background, where you grew up, where you went to school, how you got into music.
I was born in 1943, 26 years ago, in Cleveland, Ohio, and grew up in Cleveland until I was 18, and then moved to Cincinnati, and then went to college, first at Simmons College in Boston, and then I transferred to the University of Michigan and graduated from Michigan, then went back to Boston and enrolled in Boston University Graduate School in special education. And music was a hobby for all those years, and I did take classical piano for 10 years, but never considered it to be any more than a hobby. And when I finished graduate school, I started teaching in East Boston and taught there for a year, and then decided that I wanted a change of climate and scenery, so I came out to the San Francisco area and hadn't ever heard of Mill Valley, but needed a place to teach since it was 2 days before school was starting. So I took a map and I picked out every name on the map and called for vacancies. And the name Mill Valley was on the map, and I called, and they had one opening for a kindergarten teacher. And I went in, and the minute I drove into the town, I knew that was where I wanted to be, and luckily I got the job. So I taught in Mill Valley that year and then the following year. Both years I taught kindergarten. And I've always written songs, and I just was so inspired by the beauty of Mill Valley itself that on Christmas Day when I was walking through town, I decided I wanted to write a song about it. So I wrote the song the same day and then taught it to the children of school, of the Strawberry Point Elementary School. And then shortly after that, I met a producer who liked the song and decided to make a recording of it. And that's how it came to be a record.
You said that when you came to Mill Valley, you knew that this was the place that you wanted to be. Could you kind of amplify on that? What about Mill Valley attracted you? Was it the natural setting or the people or the architecture of the buildings or what?
Well, at first it was just a general feeling of warmth and congeniality that I felt when I just drove into the town. And it was a beautiful day and sunny out, and there were so many trees, and people just seemed to have an air of contentment about them walking through the town. And it was a smaller town than I had ever lived in, so that was intriguing to me because it seemed much more personal. And then as I talked to people, I discovered there really was a certain feeling of friendliness that people in Mill Valley seemed to have, which was different from other cities I had lived in. It was those things, plus just the beauty of the town. It's a very pretty place, and the parks and the creeks and the trees and everything that I ended up writing about in the song were all very appealing to me.
Well, your song Mill Valley and the other side of the record, Happiest Day of My Life, reflect an obvious talent. You said earlier that you played classical piano, I believe, for 10 years. How did you get started in music? Did your parents make you take lessons like so many parents do with their children, or did you want to just do it on your own? Just how?
When I was 7 years old, I got the idea that I wanted to take piano lessons, and we went out and bought an old upright piano that had a very clinky sound to it, and I somehow stayed with practicing and with lessons, which was different from most children, I guess, because as they grow up and have other interests, they sort of break away from their music and then regret it later. But somehow I managed to stay with it. And then I realized when I guess I reached adolescence and had a lot of unhappy times, and I realized that I could make myself feel better by writing songs about it. And that's when I started to. I wrote my first song when I was 13. And then just sporadically through the years, I would write more songs whenever I felt moved to.
In looking over published accounts of your background that have appeared in the press recently, I've noticed reference to a band that you played with in Boston, I believe, called the Three Faces of Eve. Could you tell us a little something about that?
Well, when I finished graduate school, I became involved in this girls' rock band in Boston, and it was a group that was started by a student at Harvard Law School, and he was looking for a pianist, and so I got that job, and then we practiced, and I became more involved in it, and then I realized, of course, that I needed to make a living, and that's when I went into substitute teaching, and I became so involved with teaching then that I was, I would get up at 7 every morning and teach for a full day and then go right to practice and get home at 11 o'clock every night, and that went on for months and months. And finally, when the band broke up, I was sort of relieved, and I felt very much committed to teaching.
Is everything seems so fortunate. You're arriving here and teaching at Strawberry Point School, and then the song. Everything has just clicked right along. How do you look at that?
That's exactly the way it happened. That's the way my whole life has been ever since I came here. And really, I had never heard of Mill Valley, as I said, and I was desperately looking for a place to teach, and I had offers in several places. Mill Valley was just another name of a town, and it was only after I drove into the town and saw what it looked like that I knew that I wanted to be here. And it was really one of the luckiest things that ever happened to me. I could have ended up in Milpitas.
Well, the story of the song Mill Valley is that you went for a walk on Christmas Day, 1969, through the downtown area, and you sat down on a bench by the bus depot, and you were moved to write this song. Tell me, what were your feelings at the time, as you can best describe them?
Well, I remember walking. I got up early in the morning and walked outside, and it was an absolutely beautiful day, crystal clear and sunny and very quiet outside. And I was struck by the difference between that Christmas and other previous Christmases that I had experienced back east. And I just walked along in sort of a haze of contentment and peacefulness, and I would meet different people along the way, and they would all smile and talk or say hello. And there was a little boy I talked to on his bicycle, and who just drove up to me and started talking as if he had known me for years, and just very natural and friendly. And I went to the park and I swung on a swing and then walked back along the sidewalk and just was very much moved by what a feeling of contentment there was and peace. I keep using the word peace because it just seems like the most peaceful town that I've ever lived in. And then I just sat down on a bench in front of the bus depot next to a big friendly dog. And I started composing the song in my mind, and it came out very easily, and then I finished it later that night. And I wrote it conscious of the fact that I was going to teach it to my children, so I wrote it in a very simple style, so that they could learn it easily.
Can you recite for me now the words of the song Mill Valley?
Yes. It starts out, I'm going to talk about a place that's got a hold on me, and then the children come in on the chorus singing Mill Valley. A little place where life feels very fine and free, Mill Valley, where people aren't afraid to smile and stop and talk with you a while, and you can be as friendly as you want to be. Mill Valley, talking about Mill Valley, that's my home. It looks as pretty in the rain as in the sun, and there's a mountain that belongs to everyone, and there are creeks that run on endlessly, and trees as far as you can see. It makes you feel as if your life has just begun. Mill Valley, talking about Mill Valley, California, that's my home. The last verse is, I know that there may come a time I'll have to leave Mill Valley, and every memory will seem like make-believe, and all the good things that are mine right now will call to me and ask me how I could have left them all behind. How could I leave Mill Valley? Talking about Mill Valley, Mill Valley, California, that's my home.
And I should add that the song Mill Valley has been adopted by the city council as the city's official song. Tell me, after the song was written, after the music was composed, what was the chain of events that led to its, I believe it was first played on KSFO radio in San Francisco. And since then, your life, I guess, has been rather hectic with interviews and public appearances and this sort of thing. Can you describe just what happened between the time the song was on the paper and its first playing on KSFO?
Well, I had taught the song to my kindergarten children, and then after that I met the producer, who was interested. When I told him that I had written a song that I sang with children, he said that he was interested in recording children's voices. And so I made a tape of the song and played it for him. I made the tape of me singing with my kindergartners, and he liked it. He listened to it about four times, and then he said, let's do it. So that started the long process of making plans for recording and getting permission from the Mill Valley schools. And the administration of the schools was just very cooperative and very accepting about the whole thing, and even enthusiastic about it. The superintendent felt that it would be a good learning experience, and so did the principal of Strawberry Point School. And there was no real opposition or suspicion about the whole thing, and people were just very glad that the children were getting such an experience. So then what happened was that we recorded in the classroom with the kindergartners. We brought the band in, and for 2 days we recorded. And it was a great experience, and they were just adorable throughout the whole thing. And then when we heard it on tape, we realized that the sound just wasn't quite professional enough. So it was suggested that we sing it with the third grade class. And the kindergartners got their share of presents and excitement out of the whole thing. So they weren't very upset. And the third graders got to go into the studio in the city and record it against the band tract in the city. And they learned the whole thing in the space of about 2 weeks. And then after the final recording was made, it had to be sent to Reprise Records, with whom the producer had a contract, and they had to listen to it and decide whether they wanted to make the record out of the tape. And not only did they like it, but they stood up and clapped when they heard the first chorus of the children singing Mill Valley, because apparently it was the most refreshing thing that had happened to them in a long time. And so the record, a rush release was put on the record, and it was officially released on June 10th. But before that, Jack Carney on KSFO had an advance copy sent to him. And he called up the school, which was very nice of him, and said that in 10 minutes he was going to play Miss Abrams' record. And the school, of course, went into absolute chaos and pandemonium, and kids and teachers were running all over the place and trying to get to radios, and they found all these little staticky radios, and they huddled around them. And we put one radio in the teacher's room, and all the kids, practically the whole school, crammed into the teacher's room, which is strictly off limits to children at other times. And the kids were screaming so loud that you couldn't hear the song. But it was really an exciting experience. And then that was a week before school was out, and then from then on, the school became a television and radio station, and radios were turned on during school hours in all the classes to listen for every playing of Mill Valley. And so it was really a delightful experience, and it was not commercial, because it was so much involved with happiness and with children's joyousness of hearing their own voices and their friends' voices. And it was just a very exciting and wholesome situation for everybody.
Well, at this point, what has become with Mill Valley nationally? How many records has it sold? Where has it been played?
It's sold around 50,000, I think, and at this time, and it's been played all over, actually all over the world now. One woman called to say that her son in Vietnam had heard it over the Armed Forces radio over there, a man who's from Mill Valley. And I've gotten calls from disc jockeys all over. I just got one tonight from Alberta, Canada, and some places are just starting to pick it up and play it, some radio stations. And I've gotten beautiful letters from people all over the country, some letters from people who had actually attended school and or lived in Mill Valley years and years ago. And today I got a letter from a boy who was in a reformatory in the Midwest and said that he had been listening and that the song was his only tie with home, and he was very moved by it and just wanted me to know how happy it made him. So there have been a lot of rewarding communications from people all over.
What kind of reactions have you received from local people in Mill Valley, some of the older residents of town?
Well, Mr. Beadle of the Chamber of Commerce has been absolutely lovely about the whole thing, very excited about it, and his words about the whole experience were that it seems to give everybody a big lift, which made me very happy to hear. And I think the general reaction, almost unanimously, has been one of pleasure and excitement and pride to hear their people's feelings about the town expressed in the song. A lot of people do feel that it expresses the mood of the town very well. And there are a few who are afraid that it'll turn Mill Valley into a tourist trap, as other towns have become in recent years. But I just feel that it's not the kind of a town that can be so easily changed.
What would you say is the essential strength or beauty of Mill Valley? It might not be a fair question. I don't know if it can be pinned down to one thing, but there's an air about Mill Valley, and I think one purpose of this oral history project is to try to capture that. And there might be a lot of opinions, but I'd like to hear what yours is.
Well, there's an example comes to mind. The other day I was standing in line at the bank, and a woman who said she was from Oklahoma was getting very impatient with the long line and the slowness of the line. And another woman who said she had also come from out of town recently said, "I used to feel that way when I first came to Mill Valley, but now I don't even mind." And you just have to get used to that when you come to Mill Valley. And I think that just shows that there's a certain leisureliness and a certain restfulness about the place and a lack of tension that's harder and harder to find. And put more positively, it's just, as I've said throughout this interview, it's a very peaceful place. And beyond that, it's very warm, and people seem sincerely interested in getting to know other people in the town and in sharing the experiences of the town with other people, which was really beautifully illustrated in this past 4th of July when we had the festival, which will go down in the annals of Mill Valley history. And it was something in which everybody shared, and old people and young people and hip people and straight people all got together and just enjoyed each other and the feeling of the town. And it was one of the most beautiful experiences for everybody because of that sharing.
How has all the publicity and attention that you have received over the past couple of months affected you and affected your personal life? Do you feel as free as you were before? Or what?
Well, I'm not as free in that I don't have the time that I had before, and I feel many more responsibilities. I feel responsibilities to answer letters that people are nice enough to write, and I have to do a lot of talking on the phone and a lot of organizing the children whenever we have to practice if we want to sing someplace. And basically, I went through one period at the very beginning of being really overwhelmed by the experience, by the suddenness of the fame that I was getting and having people notice me on the street and know who I was. And I went through a lot of different stages, and I'm still going through different stages about it, because it is a very radical change in one's life to suddenly become any kind of a public personality. But I think the way in which it happened to me was such a good, healthy way. It was through something that I did, and with the help of the children, of course, and which was an honest expression of myself. I think the way in which it happened to me was such a good, healthy way. It was through something that I did, and with the help of the children, of course, and which was an honest expression of myself, and not something that I had to sell out to do, or to be untrue to myself. And so there's no image that I have to maintain, and there's no pressure. I don't have to wear makeup or set my hair when I walk through Mill Valley. I look the way I've always looked, and that's the way people know me. And I just feel very, very much at ease and free to be myself. And that's the nice part of the whole thing, is that people are pleased with what it is that they hear on the record, which seems to them and is, in fact, an honest expression of myself and of the children.
What kinds of music are you working on now? The things that you have in the works now, are they in a similar musical vein to Mill Valley, sort of a light style? Are they into rock or jazz or what?
Well, I think the next record will be one that I wrote a few years ago, which is called This Time of Life, and is similar in feeling to Mill Valley, and in that it's simple, fairly simple, and it has a light, easy style to it, not at all sophisticated in rock or jazz. It's hard to describe it, just it's soft and rather melodic. And I've adapted it so that it can be sung with children meaningfully, and the words seem to fit. And I really think that the style in which I wrote Mill Valley and in which I wrote this other song that we may be recording next is one that is most comfortable for me. And for a long time I was a little bit embarrassed about it, because I was afraid to have people who were very sophisticated musicians hear it for fear they would make fun of it. And in fact, I'm sure a lot of them would. But I've sort of accepted that for now that is my style. And some people enjoy it, and I enjoy doing it. So that's what I'm staying with for a while.
Where would you say that music is at in the United States today, vis-a-vis young people? And again, this might be too broad of a question, but I'm interested. You are young. A lot of people might think that you're into rock music, a hippie thing, but it's obvious that you're not. You're recording songs with very young children. Is there a field opening up for this sort of thing, or do you think music will go the way of the rock vein that's been in effect for the past couple of years?
Well, I think from now on that there's no real direction, no one direction that music will take. I don't think there has been really for a long time. Rock music and heavy rock has been very popular and may continue, but it's spread out in so many different directions. And right now, there is room for every single style that I can think of, from classical to Renaissance to folk to heavy rock and to soft rock, and now gospel and spiritual. It just seems that there's a market for every kind of music that can possibly be produced, and I think that's indicative of the variety, the great variety that just permeates our whole American way of life. Everything scattered and changing and variegated, and the music is too.
Have you been influenced at all by the old group, the Limelighters? I believe a couple of years ago they recorded an album, long play album, exclusively with children from Berkeley. Did that record or did that group have any effect on your music?
Well, there was one song that they did on that album called Morningtown Ride, which was written by Malvina Reynolds. And having heard that song, I taught it to my children, and that has been one of the favorite songs of any class that I've worked with, Morningtown Ride. And that sort of introduced me to Malvina Reynolds, who writes a lot of beautiful songs. And in fact, if we ever get around to doing an album, we'll probably record some of her songs on the album. And she's gone in a direction that I'd like to sort of follow. She's written some very meaningful and lovely songs that are child-oriented, but they really appeal to people of all ages.
How have the children in the third grade class at Strawberry Point School responded to the attention that they have received since Mill Valley was released?
Well, they like me, have gone through many different stages about it. At first, they were absolutely ecstatic with excitement, and gradually they've gotten a little bit used to it, and some have even gotten a little blasé about the whole thing, which is very healthy, because I would not have wanted them to become starstruck and want to become child stars and go into music, into the profession in the wrong way. And they've been very happy, and they get a big kick out of signing autographs and getting calls from relatives all over the country and seeing their pictures in the paper, and it's just a really fun experience for them. And they've made some funny comments, like one little boy who has now been whose quote has appeared through AP news on almost every newspaper in the country, Greg Berman, says that he likes what's happened, and he doesn't like it. He likes it because he likes the music and he likes to sing, but he doesn't like it because now whenever the song comes on, his mother stares at him and he gets embarrassed. And so his mother stares at him and his father whistles the song while he's shaving, and he says sometimes he's lucky enough to get out of the house before his father starts whistling. And Brian Friedman, who is another one, has been quoted as saying that he gets called in from baseball games when the song comes on the radio, and he doesn't like that at all. And so they're very colorful, and they have a lot of good things to say about it. But basically, they're still the same as they were, I'm very glad to report.
Did you select the kids by quality of voice, or did you just take one class?
We just took one class, and it happened that they were the best singers in the school. And in fact, the teacher reported that the only boy who sang off key had moved away 2 weeks before we made the recording. So they were just perfect for it. And the teacher was also very cooperative and very pleased about the whole thing. The teacher's name is Bob Pearson. He's been at Strawberry Point for a few years.
In your song, I believe there's a line, if the time will ever come when I have to leave Mill Valley, I'm paraphrasing now. Where would you go from here?
That's a good question. I have no idea. In the past, every place I've lived, I've always felt the need to move on and live in a different place after a while. And so after I left home, I lived just about 2 years in every place that I lived, and then I just felt that I needed to change and I needed to grow. And there was nothing particular that I had to stay for. And now that I've found Mill Valley, I have no desire to leave, really. And the only reason I wrote that in the song was that I know things change, and you know, sometimes it's necessary to move away. But I feel like I've really found the place that I would like to make my home, and even if I do leave, I'll always want to come back to it.
Your song has described a Mill Valley that I think some people in this town would think is perhaps a bit idyllic. And your comments in this interview have more or less gone along with that. Can you see any aspects of life in this town that you would like to improve?
It's really hard to say because it's true. I do have an idyllic picture of the town, and I know that the song portrays a kind of a utopia, and that may be because I haven't really been involved in the politics of the town and in the zoning regulations and some of the problems that are going on here as anywhere. And in any town where everything is changing, there are some people who resent other people in the town because they feel that they're not responsible citizens and don't look respectable and so forth. That's one way in which I would like to see the town change a little. I would like to see those people who are made very uncomfortable by the presence of other people who don't look just as they look, to open up a little bit and try to communicate with the other people and realize that they're every bit as good and as valuable as they. Not very well expressed. In other words, I'd like to see them even more of a communal and together feeling in the town. And as far as anything more specific than that, it's hard for me to say because I'm not that familiar with the underlying structure and with a lot of the problems. I didn't
know. Rita, can you tell me what instruments you play?
I play piano, electric piano, guitar, auto harp, recorder, and kazoo, washtub bass, and washboard.
What instruments do you play on the song Mill Valley and the flip side, Happiest Day of My Life?
I play piano, electric piano, and recorders, overdubbed. There were 16 tracks, so we recorded one track and then overdubbed another.
And who accompanied you on the recording? Was Lynn Elder involved, or was it a different band, or what?
I was lucky enough to be able to choose two friends of mine who were very good guitarists. One played 12-string guitar, and one played 6-string guitar. And then we had a professional drummer and bass player.
Are you going to be making concert appearances in the Bay Area? Are you going to be playing at coffee houses, nightclubs, or what?
Well, it's very difficult to make concert appearances with the children since we only know 3 songs. We can sing them over and over again.
Well, what's the third song?
The third song is Magic Penny, which was written by Melvina Reynolds. But I do play and sing with Lynn Elder, who is a Mill Valley instrument maker, makes Renaissance instruments, hurdy-gurdies and psalteries, and so we do varied combinations of instruments and voice together, and with very different styles of singing.
Rita, I understand that in the coming school year, you will be not teaching full-time, but you will be working with the Mill Valley School District on special musical education programs. Tell me, what role do you feel music should play as an educational tool in an elementary school?
I think that the value of music is often greatly underestimated in education, and that my best teaching moments have centered around music, at least in the lower grades. And music is important to everybody, but younger children especially really respond to music, and it's very comfortable for them, it's a happy thing for them, and it's a very good group and cooperative experience that teaches them how to work with others to produce a common product, which in this case is the sound, you know, of a song. And they just, it really gets down to the very simple level of happiness and enjoyment. And I know that both songs, the Mill Valley and the Happiest Day of My Life, seem to give a real feeling of enjoyment and happiness to the kids. And I know that not only the kids who live in Mill Valley, but I've had reports from people that all over the country, when children hear it, they just love it and they play the records over and over and over again. And so that there's that level of just enjoyment of music and making children happy and giving them a positive group experience. And then there's, of course, the other level of learning, the learning experience, being able to memorize words and learning how to relate pitches to each other and being able to duplicate sounds that you hear. And all those things relate to a lot of different learning areas.
As a school teacher, you obviously have been exposed to young children in the elementary grades, and I've always felt that, and I can recall from when I was at that grade level of kindergarten through eighth or whatever, that music and singing and shouting seems to come so naturally to young children, and your record seems to bear that out, and the concert on the 4th of July certainly bears that out. Yet, in the past few years, we've seen something rather extraordinary happening in this country, where young people seem to turn out a lot of very natural, physical sorts of enjoyment and start turning on to chemical enjoyment, drugs, narcotics, this sort of thing. I'm wondering, what are your thoughts on the changes that young people have gone through over the last couple of years, and where they might be headed?
Well, the problem of alienation in society is one that you could talk about for days, and it seems that there are more complex problems now in our society than ever before, and young people are picking up on it. And they're looking for ways to deal with it and ways to escape from it, and just trying to find themselves in all the confusion and chaos of modern society. And drugs has been one area in which they've looked for comfort or escape or whatever you can call it. I think young people are so much more sophisticated now and so much more self-aware than ever before. And also, since they don't have to struggle so much for just the basic means of survival the way our parents did, they have more time, really, to be occupied with other things, with deeper things and with more inner thoughts and feelings and awareness. And so this leads also to a lot of confusion, because they're searching inwardly for answers and looking into their own minds. And it's very confusing to them. It's also very confusing to older people who are trying to understand younger people, because they grew up in such a different society. And I think music, by the way, bears out that theory, because the music has gotten, on the one hand, very, very confusing and frenzied, and the acid rock and the loud, hard-driving stuff is really an expression of the inner confusion and maybe disillusionment that young people feel. And then on the other hand, there are other kinds of music that's happening simultaneously. And there's a return to the older style of music in some areas, and folk music, which is getting, or at least has been popular for the last few years, is sort of a return to the basic roots and probably offer something comforting for people who are looking for answers to all the confusion. It's solid and it's simple. Country and Western music, the same thing. The more complicated the world gets, the more simple the music that a lot of people are turning to. It's just good that people realize that they can find some comfort and consolation in music. And it's unfortunate when people don't realize that, because music really can be a very therapeutic force in people's lives.
As you know, this recording is going to go into the, I guess, the archives of the Mill Valley Public Library, and maybe 50 years from now, people will be listening to this interview. Is there any one thing that you would like to say for, you know, people that are going to be here many years from now?
Well, if you're here 50 years from now, I say congratulations. You made it. And I would say, if I may presume to give any kind of advice, it's just always to try as hard as you can to be in touch with your own feelings and with your feelings about yourself and about other people, and to be honest with yourself and other people, and that's the best way to get along in the world.
You have been listening to an interview with Ms. Rita Abrams, who is the composer of the song Mill Valley, which is the official town song as designated by the Mill Valley City Council at a recent meeting. And I must say that Ms. Rita Abrams is really a delightful person. Good night.
As a supplement, you will now hear both sides of Rita's record. The second side is entitled The Happiest Day of My Life.